Here we are in the Absolute Monastery on December 4th, 1999. And our topic tonight is last minute preparations. How many times have you experienced last minute preparations? You had everything in order, you had everything planned, and then nothing was where you expected it to be. It wasn't at all where you expected it to be. Like tonight, the keys for the car weren't where I expected them to be. The keys for the White Expedition were not there. And somewhere, I have misplaced them. But that's okay. Last minute preparations merely meant that I went to the other place where I kept the second set and pulled them forth and use that to scooty-doo. But last minute preparations are really not necessary. We shouldn't do last minute preparations, and yet this is what we do most of our life. People sometimes hear me talk and they say, my gosh, you didn't have any notes, you didn't prepare for this at all, you had no preparation for what you're doing, and you gave a good talk, it's true, but you didn't have any preparation, you didn't prepare for it, you didn't plan for it, you just did it at the last minute. Well, could you say that you brush your teeth, you learn how to brush your teeth at the last minute? That every day that you get up and brush your teeth, you're learning how brand new to do it? No. Could you say that every day when you get in your car, you have to learn all over again how to drive? I hope not. Would you say that every day you think, hey, what a wonderful idea to give water to plants. That would encourage plants to grow better. Why doesn't the whole world think about watering plants? And of course, the world does. This is no last minute preparation. This is no last minute thought. These are things that have been going on for centuries. They've been going on for millennia. People have been watering plants. People have been doing lovely things, brushing their teeth and other things for centuries. It's nothing new. And as far as me, I spend a lifetime preparing for each talk that I give. Each talk is made up of thousands and thousands of ideas that I have gathered over a lifetime, and I have them sorted in my mental filing cabinet. I haven't consciously sorted them in my mental filing cabinet. If I had to consciously do it, it'd be quite a tedious job. Just imagine putting all the thoughts that belong for happiness together, all the thoughts that belong for sadness together, all the thoughts that belong for death or life or birth or, you know, together. Well, you know, it'd be quite a job. I tell you guys to do that. I say, now, go into your happiness book. Go into your book in which you write all of those, what do you write in there? Your blessings. Go in the book in which you write all your blessings, take them out, transcribe them to the computer, and then file them according to topic. File them according to abundance, according to health, according to happiness, according to all these things. Then when you're ready to give a lecture, you'll have all of those illustrations right at hand that happened to you. There are blessings that took place in your life, and you can tell people about it, and people can say, wow, what wonderful things happened to you. It's too good to be true. No one could have all those wonderful things happen to them. It happened to me. And it happens to all of us. When we take time to write down our blessings in the first place, and then when we take time to catalog them. Because cataloging them is very important. Most of you have been to Toastmasters, the stupidest organization in the world. All they do is teach you how to talk in public. They teach you how to prepare to talk in public. They teach you how to make outlines. They teach you how to give illustrations. They teach you how to give jokes. And they teach stupid, stupid, stupid stuff, isn't it? Hardly worth going to hear, is it?
No, sir.
Well, if you're going to waste all your time going there, why don't you learn something? They say, go to these books on humor. Go to these books on opening of a talk. Go to these books that have all these illustrations. And then take one of them for yours. Right? Again, repeat, it's stupid. You have enough wonderful illustrations in your life that you don't have to have any last-minute preparations from somebody else. You don't have to take somebody else's idea, somebody else's dream, somebody else's goal, and use it as yours. But this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. We're doing some research recently in Europe. And we're calling up all of our old friends in Europe that we haven't seen for a decade or more. And we're saying to them, hey, we're going to come over and visit you. And they say, oh, that's nice. I'd be happy to see you. But I have a new guru now. Oh, who was your guru before? You. Me? I was your guru? I taught you. Your guru is who? Yourself. Yourself. But you see, people who have not found the guru within themselves are looking. And they can't find it with me, because I won't let them make a guru out of me. I won't let them make me their master. Make me the one who teaches them how to heal and how to do all these things. I'll teach you the techniques for these things, but you have to do it yourself. I will not demonstrate it in front of you. I will demonstrate many things in front of you. But if you worship me, you won't see it. If you think that I'm just an ordinary guy like you, then you'll see the miracles that I do. And then you'll say, I do that too. I do that too. And you won't go saying, well, Herb, you're special. You're better than anybody else. No. You'll say, hey, you're great. You'll say of yourself, I'm wonderful. I'm fantastic. I'm glorious. I am the creator of my world. But you see, you're doing everything at the last minute. You're thinking about things the last minute. You're planning the last minute. You're not preparing yourself for the goal that you have set for yourself. Now, if I am really getting across to you, and I would like to think I am, then you would not keep a blessing book. If I'm really getting across to you, you would not learn prayer techniques. If I'm really getting across to you, you would not learn how to heal others. You would not learn how to be a practitioner. If I'm really getting across to you, you would not even know that there is another human being on the face of the earth. Because you're number one and you're number infinity. You're the beginning and the end. There is no other being on the face of the earth than you. Can you conceive of that? Can you conceive of you being the only being on the face of the earth? Now just imagine. Something happened, and either you were teleported to some other planet that had no people on it, or you're on this planet, and all of a sudden, poof, all the people are gone. Just all the people are gone. Would you keep animals around, perhaps? But all the people are gone. And then you're the only one who says what's going to happen. You say what time you're going to go to bed. You say what time you're going to go up. You say where you're going to go, what you're going to do. You don't fly in any airplanes because you have to read the book first on how to fly them. They're there. All the airplanes are there waiting for you to go anywhere you want. Cars are there. Trucks are there. Motorboats are there. Yachts are there. Anything you want. It's all right there. All in perfect condition. All completely gassed up, ready to go. And wherever you go, there are service stations that are just filled with gas, ready to go. You see, the electricity is not shut off. There has not been a devastating condition which has killed the people. They're just not there. There's not tables that are set and people left them in a hurry, like in the Pompeii experience, but you're the only one on earth. Now, what are you going to create as your life? You can do anything you want to do. There's not another soul on earth who expects anything of you, who wants anything of you, who needs anything of you, or who's going to help you. There's not one person on the face of the earth who is going to be interested in what you're doing. And you're only going to amuse yourself. You're only going to make yourself be pleasantly surprised by what you do. You're not going to jeopardize anything. You're not going to take the car and go as fast as you can and say, oh boy, I can go as fast as I can because there's nobody around here. Hey, I'm going to use good judgment. I don't want to have an accident. There's nobody here to work with me, you know. I don't want to have surgery and there's no one here to do any surgery on me. I don't want to mess up this body, this temple of the living God. I want to take good care of it. So I'm not speeding to impress somebody else, which is what speeding is. I am driving comfortably, not safely, but comfortably, that I can very readily have. And there's no rush. There's no rush to be anyplace. There's no rush to do anything. You're the only one on the face of the earth. Now, what did you say your dream was? What did you say your goal was? Don't let it be a last-minute decision, because you'd be living for a number of years on earth all by yourself without having a goal, and that wouldn't seem very satisfying or rewarding. But what is your goal for yourself? Okay, you want to be a minister. Minister of what? Of yourself. That's fascinating. Okay, you want to have a church. Well, who's going to come to it? Okay, you're going to be a millionaire. Well, what are you going to spend it on? Everything is yours right there. You just go into the store and pick up what you want. Nobody say you can or can't do anything. And no one to tell you that you can't wear white trousers because they look like a homosexual's trousers, you know, and so you shouldn't wear those sort of things. You know, no one to tell you anything. No one to tell you anything. If you want to walk around naked,
hey.
You know, no one to tell you. But you have to please yourself. But whatever you want to do, whatever you want to do, there's no one to tell you that you're wrong or you're right. Nobody. But now, what is it that you really want to do? What is it that pleases you? Well, I wanted to impress my mother with how much money I had. I wanted to impress my dad with how talented I am. I wanted to impress my sisters and brothers with where I am in the world. And they're not there. Okay, now, those things have gone by. Well, I thought it would be fun to learn languages. Who are you going to speak with? Okay. I thought it would be fun to write books. Well, who's going to read them? Except that you're going to write for yourself, which is always fine, too. Then why write? Why not just experience it? And I thought I'd put out a little magazine, but for whom? Who's going to read it? Who's going to enjoy it? I'm going to do great graphics. Well, you're going to only impress yourself, because you're the only person on the face of the earth. Now, you see, this last-minute stuff can get you in a lot of trouble. What is your dream? I told you the story of the Twilight Zone, where this man was, he loved to read. He loved to read, but he had to work many, many hours, and he didn't have much time to read, and his glasses were yay thick, and he was just eager to read. Well, one day he went into the vault in his bank, and he didn't close the door, but the door was pretty tight. And when he came out, and he fell asleep, and when he came out, there was nothing there. There were no people. The buildings were knocked down, not all of them, but many. And he thought, oh dear me, what is this now? Where are the people? What am I to do? So he went into the drugstore, and he found everything he wanted there. He went into the grocery store, and the food was there, and cans, and a lot of fresh foods yet, because it's only a short time. And but then he walked up the stairs of the library, And he found the library, this grand, beautiful building that Andrew Carnegie had built. And he thought, wow, oh, I can read, and there's nothing else for me to do. So he gathered together some 100 books on the stair of the library, and he sat there and started to read. And then he heard a noise. And he turned around quickly, and it was just a timber falling or a brick or something. But when he turned around, he dropped his glasses. And he stepped on his glasses. And his glasses were no longer useful to him. Here he had all the time in the world to read, and no glasses to read with. Now, we make the story quite pathetic, and really, that story is pathetic. But if this man were so interested in reading, he surely would be inventive in his mind, and he would realize he could go to any optician's or to the drugstore and look at the various glasses that they have for sale there and choose a pair that helped him. But of course, if he's got glasses yay thick, the drugstore doesn't carry those kind, do they? They don't have those kind. They only have a very limited issue of them. So he goes to the optometrist. But of course, you know, he can't see what he's doing. He's going places. He doesn't know where he's going. What can he do? You see, his dream, his desire, manifests for him in very real terms. But he's like the woman who treated for the Cadillac. He got the Cadillac, but didn't have the money to pay for insurance and gas. And so it sat in front of her house. A white elephant. A useless object that had no purpose. It wasn't even showing how rich she was, because she never drove it. See? Do you have some dream that you're not going to let wait till the last minute to do something about? Do you have some desire in your heart? Something that you'd really like to do? Something that you'd like to accomplish in this lifetime? Do you have something that's just important for you? Oh, I'd like my dad to be this. I'd like my mother to be that. I'd like my family to be this. I'd like to help the world. I'd like to have a couple of $1 million so I could give $1 million to mother, because she was so wonderful raising me and all the tough times that we had, you know. I'd like to be a surgeon so that I could heal my father who just died, you know, after the cause, after the fact. But you're number one. You're number one. What does it mean to be number one? What does it mean when you say, I am number one? Does that mean that somebody else is important in your life? No. If you ever forget what this is all about, stop and think what you would do if you were the last person on earth. Not tragedy-wise, but you were just the last person on earth. There was not another, and you knew it. You knew you were the last person, so you weren't in a haunting, is there someone out there? Is there somebody? You know, you just knew you were the last person, so there's no discussion anymore. What is it that you would do? Let's put another question to you. We're learning that we're God. Everything is God. We're God, so we're everything. What do you think, just imagine, what do you think God would do if God found himself all alone on earth, nobody else on earth, and there he is looking at his domain and thinking, what the heck is this? On earth, with all the people pleasures and people needs, and there's no people. There's just me, God. So what would God do? God would create people. So what would you do if you were the last person on earth? You would create people. But you can't do that. Because that only God can do. Oh, you're calling yourself God? Why don't you demonstrate it? Nobody's going to call you silly if you seek to demonstrate it and you are unsuccessful. You see, this is what we say. We hold a healing service and nobody comes. We talk about that in the minister's manual. Well, how could God hold a healing service and nobody would come? Impossible. One, ourself, is enough. I gave many lectures to empty halls when I was starting out. I was just a young punk kid who was working at it, knew it all. And then the world said, well, you may be good and so forth, but I have the fights to watch and the baseball game to watch. I have a book to read. I have places to go and people to see and mountains to climb. And they didn't come see me. And so then my mother started to come. Wasn't she nice? And then she brought her friends along. Come on, support my son. He doesn't know that I'm calling you and wanting you to come, but come on, let's give him a little help. And so she brought her friends. And then her friends told their other friends what they were learning. And people started coming because of what was being taught. And pretty soon, I had the room full. It was very nice. But I only had the room full because I believed in myself. If I hadn't believed in myself, I wouldn't have got past that first night. Can you imagine this great big prideful self of ours that goes into the meeting room and we've advertised it and no one shows? Fascinating, isn't it? Sounds like something we did in San Gallen, doesn't it? We had, about 20 people there?
10, 12
people. We advertised in the newspaper, we advertised on the radio, and we told our friends about it, and we had about 10 or 12 people there. And you got to understand, 10 or 12 people includes us. There's Ellen and I and Stefan and your sister. And,
I did.
And Ingeborg. Yeah, but you weren't caught up with us yet. You were new. So you're on this side over here.
Yeah.
You're somebody who came because they wanted to hear it. You know.
No, I was already. I knew already.
Oh, you were.
No, but you made up of stuff. No, not stuff.
Yeah, right. But anyhow, so you see, that's not very encouraging. But did I give half a talk because the room was half full?
Yeah.
No. Did I find each one of you exciting and wonderful and worthwhile sharing every thought that I had? Was I willing to just go on and on? Yeah. You see, you can create. You can create your world exactly the way you want it. But don't wait till the last minute. You can create your world exactly the way you want. What do you want in your world? What sort of experiences do you want in your world? What sort of happenings, peopling do you want in your world? Is it important to you? I would think it was. It's important to you who you have in your world. We talk to people who are not necessarily God unlimited people, not necessarily positive thinkers. And we talk to these people, and they're very intelligent. They have a lot of good ideas. They're very positive in many ways. And they have a few negative ways, but so do we too. And as we talk to these people, we find out, hey, they're just normal, beautiful people, but they're just like us. They're just like us. They're struggling and working and worrying, attempting to accomplish goals that they have. Are they getting closer to their goals than we are? Their goals, basically, are relative goals. Their goals are to do the work on the farm, to do the work in the house, to do the work in the factory, to do the work wherever they may be. That's their goal. To raise their children, to be good to their spouse. That's their goal. And then you come here to the Absolute Monastery, And what are our goals? Our goals are to put out the gist. Our goals are to operate the organization. Our goals are to keep harmony in our organization. Our goals are to go out and tell people wherever we may all about the organization and the philosophy. That sounds pretty human, doesn't it? That sounds pretty normal. But you see, our goal is just a little different. Whether we get the job done or not makes no difference to us. How we do the job makes all the difference in the world. Because it does not matter if the gist never comes out. If the gist is put out just with careless abandon, it might better not be put out. But if the gist is put out carefully, gently, lovingly, so that every word goes to somebody which is going to change their lives, every idea that's in that gist is going to uplift someone who may or may not want it to be uplifted. That, you know, I can't help thinking about this lady and the gist. Her husband took the ashes from the fireplace, and in the ashes, unburned, was the gist right in the middle, untouched. Now, it's true. The lady did not say whether there were any other magazines untouched in the middle of the Holocaust. Because we can make assumptions. We can say, well, hey, we burned a lot of magazines that were all stacked together, and they burned on the outside, and they burned, and they burned. And then when we took out the ashes, there was still some stuff in the center that wasn't burned because it was packed in there so tight, didn't get any air, and didn't burn. Now, we can come to that conclusion. I'm not ignorant of that. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to say there's a miracle where there wasn't a miracle. But she didn't tell us that. And I think she's wise enough to say that if she did. Certainly her husband, who is such a pragmatist, he would be, pragmatist he could be, would be aware of that and say it very definitely himself. But to her, it was a miracle. To her, she called Stefan and told him that and said how wonderful it was. To her, it was very special. And she's not a neophyte. She's not a person who doesn't know how things burn and how things don't burn. To her, it was significant. And to her, a miracle happened. She read an article which had nothing to do with her high blood pressure. But the technique was something that touched her. And so she used that same technique and said, my blood pressure is normal. And she laughed at herself. She laughed at herself. She said, this is the silliest, stupidest thing in the world. To say to myself that I have normal blood pressure. But she said it, still laughing. And then what happened? Her blood pressure returned to normal. We have that article in the December Gist coming up in Stefan's column. Very beautiful article. Very beautiful. But you see, these people are the workers of miracles. It's not that the gist didn't burn. It's not that she read the gist that didn't burn. It's that she put a principle into motion to accomplish a goal. Now, we have to be very careful using the word principle, don't we? But she put a cause in motion to accomplish a goal. And did she accomplish it? Sure did. Do you think that she is Johnny-come-lately to ideas like this? No way. She was so ready for that when she heard it, it changed her life. She was so ready for that when she realized what was going on, hey, why not me? I was talking to Michael today, and I said, Mike, we're considering this laser eye treatment. And he says, oh, you are? Wonderful. He said, I'm considering it too. And he said, my friend had it done and was very successful with it. And he said, you're going to Mexico? And I said, yes, that's where my doctor has his surgeon. Well, Badu. And I said, Michael, don't put any causes in motion for me that you don't want me to have, because it's going to be perfect. He said, but Tijuana, you know. And I said, Michael, miracles happen all over the world. They happen in the strangest, most wonderful places. And he says, well, Herb, for you, it will work perfectly, I know. Well, thank you, Michael. But you see, you should have the consciousness so that everyone will say, for you, it'll work. And that's okay. You have the consciousness for yourself. For you, it'll work. It'll be effective. It'll be wonderful. Go for it. Go for it. Let your world be filled with all these beautiful things. I was talking to one woman in the optometrist's office, and she was saying to me, oh, yes, it's wonderful to be able to wake up in the morning and reach over and see the alarm clock and do all those things. I said, well, you could have done that with contact lenses. She said, yeah, but this is different. She says, and then for the first time, I realized that the leaves on the tree were not fuzzy things. They were sharp little leaves, beautiful, filled with color and filled with life. She says, it is exciting with this new direction to my life. You see, we take for granted so much. We take so many things for granted. We take for granted of having youthful, nice, soft feet. And then as we get older, the feet get a little bit harder. But does that have to be that way? How much older is older? Little children have very pliable feet. And when you're a young adult in your 30s, your feet are still very perfect. And then, depending upon what your mental attitude is about your feet, then your feet begin to have experiences of their own. What kind of feet do you have? What kind of foundation do you have under you? Do you have a perfect foundation? Do you love your feet? Do you tell your feet how much you appreciate them? Or do you do it at the last minute? Or do you do it at the last minute when they start to hurt, or when they start to ache, or when they start to peel or split or whatever they do? You see, we wait till the last minute on too many things. I told you the story about the president of the United Church of Religious Science. He went down to Oren's office, and Oren was the head of the education department and a very good practitioner. And Dr. Henley says, Oren, will you treat for the Congress? It starts tomorrow. It's a week-long Congress, and all of the churches are going to be greeting here and doing business, and we'll be having a wonderful session. And Oren said, no, I won't. He said, no, Chief, I won't. And Dr. Henley, who was a very proper man, but what is this, Chief? No, Chief, I won't. What is that? He said, I won't do it now because I've been doing it all along. I have seen it whole and perfect at the time that we initiated it and said, this is the date we're going to have it, and these are the people who are coming. I see every person coming to this Congress as happy and rewarded by all the things they learn here. He said, I don't wait till the last minute. I don't wait till the last minute to speak my word, to claim the truth about myself. He said, I do it constantly. I do it knowingly every moment of my life. And you know, Oren Mohn had something going for him there. He was a character. He had a laugh like a hyena. But he was a real character, a lovely guy. Intelligent, every way. But when the president came down and said, treat, he said he wouldn't. Now, he could have said to the president, I have been treating ever since the Congress, the organization announced when the date was set for the meeting, and I'm recognizing every day that the Congress is a success. He could have said that, but instead, like Donald Simoda, he told the people what they didn't want to hear. He told the people, it's up to you. It's up to you how you live your life, how you do your thing. It's up to you how successful you are. It's up to you which direction you're going in life. It's up to you whether you live in the past, the present, or the future, or the now. It's up to you. You make that choice for yourself. Nobody else makes it. It's up to you. Now, what do you want to do? Do you want to make that decision? If you want to make that decision, then start right now. Start right now. Living your blessings. Living them. Don't be so surprised when miracles happen to you. You're so surprised when miracles happen to you, the miracles say, hey, she's not ready for me, he's not ready for me. I mean, you know, let's not shake their boat. You're liable to have a heart attack and die. Don't want to do that to them. But we tell people, do you know I treated for them to be whole and perfect, and they're whole and perfect? Well, let's hope so. Let's know so. That's what it's all about. Or that I call that little boy a genius, and he was a genius? Did you know that? Look at Ellen's grandchildren. What a bunch of klutzes they are. She goes around calling them geniuses constantly. To their face, behind their back, under every circumstance, she sends them tapes and says, you're geniuses, you're geniuses. And then she acts surprised to find they really are geniuses. That they're fabulous kids. They get wonderful grades in school. They do great work in school. Some don't get good grades in school because those are the ones that are being independent. They're not stupid, but they're just being independent. You see, when we live our life so beautifully, so wonderfully, so completely, all our dreams come true. All our desires come true. All our wishes, if you will. All our desires come true. But if we wait till the last minute to put the cause in motion and then say, well, I spoke my word that I'm whole and perfect. Now, why aren't I whole and perfect? Well, what have you been saying all your life? What sort of attitude have you been building up in your life? Give yourself a moment or two to override those attitudes, to put new attitudes in motion, to put new ideals in motion for yourself. This is important. This is very important. We had healing meetings up in Andromeda. There were many things they had going before I came there, and I didn't stop everything that would be wise to do. I went along with them and I introduced them to the things that they were really doing. Well, we'd be at the outdoor chapel, and everybody would come down before the service. Not everybody, but most of them. They'd come down before the service and then they'd make a big circle down in the front there. Almost several hundred people almost, and holding hands, and then we'd speak our word for wholeness and perfection. Well, they gave their standard prayers, which are good prayers. They gave their standard prayers, dear God, bless us, help me a sinner, let me be whole and perfect, and things like that. And I said, that's wonderful. And then I gave a talk as I went to each person, almost like giving him the sacrament. And I went to each person and I said, you are the Christ. You are the embodiment of everything good and beautiful. Every organ, next person, every organ, action, function of your body is whole and perfect. And I laid my hand on him and I said, I bless you and I see you whole and perfect. Every organ, action in your body, you create this for yourself. You are beautiful. I am lighting the spark within you that lets you be and experience these wonderful things. I am coming to you with this match of love. And I went around to each one, and that's a lot of people to do. And the service was supposed to be going. But everybody was enjoying because I had the mic right pinned to my chest here, and I had this little remote box on my side. And so as I would talk to people, talk on the microphone, everyone could hear. And then they could hear the comments that the people made too, which were more interesting than even my comments. But I went around to the whole gang. And little children, they had between every other adult was some little child holding on to mommy's hand being part of this thing. and I did the same thing with them. And it was just fabulous what happened. But what happened was the people who were coming there for healing didn't come there anymore. Why? They didn't need it. They didn't need it. And one of the ladies of the church, who was the director of the choir and a little bit wanting it her way, she said, "See, Dr. Barley, the people aren't coming anymore." And I said, "Name me one." "Well, what about her?" And I said, "Well, she came here for a healing, didn't she?" "Oh, yes, she came. She's been coming every Sunday for a healing because we're supposed to be a healing church." And I said, "And how is she now?" "Oh, she's whole and perfect. She's fine." I said, "Well, why should she come back?" "Why, she came and got what you came for. She came every Sunday religiously for it. She wanted the healing. She didn't hear anything else. She didn't hear anything else. She wasn't listening. She's listening only to how she could be healed." "Will the lady in the brown hat in the fifth row come down here? I can see that you're whole and perfect now." You know, that's the type of thing that they wanted. That's the type of thing Catherine Kuhlman did and many other healers did, and very effectively. And people came up and they were healed. But I didn't do that. I worked with these people so that they would be master of themselves. And many left who were there because they wanted me to be master of them. And I wouldn't. And they left. They went to other fundamental churches where they received that kind of treatment, and that was great. But new people came. New people from Minneapolis, from Bloomingfield, Bloomington, and from Eden Prairie, and from St. Paul, and from Minneapolis, and from you name all the little towns, Buffalo, all the way around, within a parameter of maybe about, well, all the way from Duluth, too. We had people come down from Duluth to Lake Minnetonka, Minneapolis there, every Sunday for months and months and months, until I went up there and opened up a center. But the thing is, they came down because they were learning a new way of looking at life. They were learning to be positive. They were learning not to wait till the last minute to take care of things in their life. They brought their children, and their children were the most apt students. And they would attend the very sophisticated classes in science of mind, and they would learn just as quickly, if not more quickly, than their parents learned. But they didn't wait till the last minute. Those kids today are outstanding kids in their field. I've told you illustrations about many of them. Remember Todd? Todd was very interested in getting better grades in school, and his father was talking to me. His father wanted to take an examination for a stockbroker. He was a clerk or something like that, and he wanted a better job. And so he said, "What do I do?" He said, "There's mathematics in there and this and that and the other thing." Just say, "I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer." So he did it. But his son was sitting just in the other room with his ear peeled to what we were talking about. And his son, who was failing in math and everything else, he just didn't care about anything. He went to school, "I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer." And he was writing down the answers on the test sheets that the teachers were giving him, but he wasn't putting down how he got it. And so the teachers were saying, "You're cheating." And he said, "No, I'm not cheating." And he came home, and I was there again, and he said, "What do I do, Dr. Riley? What do I do?" And I said, "You just tell the teachers to give you a test with them sitting right there in front of you, and to give you questions, and you give them the answers without any paper or pencil or anything in front of you." And so he did it, and he did it perfectly. He did it perfectly. He didn't show them how he did it, but he did it perfectly. And they had to realize that he was not cheating. And he went on to become quite a fine mathematician. He had hated math up to that time. So, what was I for him? I was a catalyst. I was someone who gave him a new lease on life, that he didn't have to wait till the last minute to accomplish something in his life. He was giving up on himself, and he was going to quit school. He was going to quit life. He was going to run away. And I did not once talk to him until afterwards about anything. But I talked to his dad about things that he could use, and he always had his big old ears tuned in to our conversation, because he felt if it was good enough for his dad, it was good enough for him. Amazing boy. We have some pictures of Andromeda that have him on and his dad and so on. Really, really great people. You see, when you start doing these things, actually he was from Duluth. When you start doing these things, you start realizing that you're being yourself and having fun, and that there's nobody that needs to appreciate it at all. I would go around, when I give some of my best lectures when I'm walking in the meditation path all alone. I don't have my tape recorder, my display, or anything along. I'm just, all of a sudden an idea comes to me, and I'm giving this lecture that is so fabulous that it would shake the whole world. It would be so great, you know. And, of course, it was for me. And many times I wake up in the middle of the night, and I'm speaking perfect German. I'm speaking perfect German, dialectic German, into whomever I'm speaking. And they don't think a thing about it. They don't think it's unusual at all. And, of course, it isn't. Because they don't know that previously I didn't know German. But in our dreams, we do many, many wonderful things. Now, who was I impressing with the fact that I could speak perfect German? Nobody. Not even myself. Because it just came naturally. Who would I impress by speaking good English? Nobody. And you expect me to do that. At least pretty good English. You expect me to do that. We do it for ourselves. Always for ourselves. Always we walk the road of life for ourselves, not for anybody else. But how do you prepare to walk the road of life for yourself in a way that's going to be meaningful for you, in a way that's going to be fun, in a way that's going to get you where you want to go? Well, first you can't. You can't walk the road of life to get you where you want to go, unless you know where you want to go. If you have no idea where you want to go, you will not get there very fast. You'll be a good person. You'll be a fun person to be with. You'll be doing lots of great and interesting things. But you won't feel fulfilled. You'll feel empty. You'll feel unsatisfied because you have no goal. Now, I'm not saying you should have a goal of becoming a millionaire, nor having perfect health, nor 101 other things like that. I'm saying you have the goal of being in tune with your divine self. Who are you really? Who am I? I am my divine self. I am my awareness of my divine self. If I am aware of my divine self as being supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, then I am it. But if I'm not aware of myself being that, then I am not it. It's just that simple. It's just that simple. We have the opportunity to know what our goal is, what our desire is, but it is too elusive. How do you pin down the idea of walking your spiritual path? How do you pin that down? You don't. How do you pin down the idea of being a master, being the Christ, being the Messiah? How do you pin something like that down? You don't. How do you dive into that stream of divinity within you and swim and enjoy yourself? Well, you don't. Because that's just an illustration. How do you get to know your divine self? How do you get to know where you're going and what you want? Spend a little time playing with yourself. Just imagining crazy things for yourself. Let's see. If I had a horse, what would I do? If I had a car, what would I do? If I was surrounded by people who wanted to talk to me, what would I talk about? Say, for instance, here I have 10 very brilliant people, and they say, Herb, I don't believe in what you're saying, because what you're saying is not logical, not reasonable, it is not something that I can put my teeth with. But I'd like to hear more of what you're saying. Well, if you're going to doubt me, I see no reason to talk to you. I'm not doubting you necessarily. I'm just saying it doesn't go with any of the logic or reason that I've ever known. And then I say, yeah, that's true. But logic and reason are not what we're working with. What we are working with are our dreams. We're working with the crazy things that make life have value, that make life have a feeling of being worthwhile. We're not working with the things that make other people think life is worthwhile. Why do we have government? Because we have a lot of people who need to be governed. What if you were the only person on earth? Would you need government?
No.
Would you hurt yourself?
No.
Would you do something to cause yourself to be unhappy?
Mm-hmm.
Would you violate the rules that you established for yourself, that you established? You say to yourself, I can eat anything I want, I can do anything I want, I can have anything I want, but if I eat a lot, I'm going to get fat, and then I'm going to get sick, and I'm going to die, and I'm going to have a very short life indeed. Now, I would like to be healthy, so I am going to eat a harmonious diet for me that's going to let me live a long, harmonious life and enjoy this solitude I have of myself. I have solitude, I have silence, I have peace. Oh, how wonderful this peace is. And, you know, give thanks for it. Then, as you begin living within yourself, looking within yourself, wondering what your dreams and your goals are, then you begin to see what satisfies you. Now, what satisfies you? What makes you happy? What is it that gives you goosebumps in a nice way? Scratching fingers down the slate? It drives people up the wall. Hearing brakes squeal, sirens. What is it that makes you feel good? Well, what makes you feel good is just the simple idea of liking yourself. What makes you feel good, what makes me feel good, is when I slip down into the Swimex and the water is just a cozy 90 degrees, and I turn on the Swimex so I can swim, and first I swim just very gently, as slow as I can, like install. You just install before you dive. And then I turn it up, and I swim a little faster, and that's paradise. That's wonderful. And I'm not proving anything to anybody, and I'm not trying to show anything to anybody. It's just wonderful. And then they were showing me today how I could make the water that's coming out even fiercer when it comes out of the side jet to massage your back and your bottom and your shoulders and stuff like that, to really beat at you like that, if you want it. But I don't think that's necessary. But it was fun to have them tell me all these things. And they were telling me all sorts of things to show me how to use the equipment. And where the buttons are, and they turned on the light button inside the Swimex now. And it's sitting right there by the bubble button. And it's fun. It's fun. I just don't need anything more. I don't want anything. I don't need that. But that just is a delight. I could have a bucket of warm water and stick my hand in it. And it would be a similar type of feeling. Or just a bathtub. Oh, did you ever luxuriate in a bathtub? Just snuggle down and put bubble bath in there and just let all those bubbles get around your body and just feel so good. And you come out and you feel your skin and it's just like a baby's, even though you're 300 years old. You know, it's wonderful. But these are the type of things that we don't count. We don't talk about as being our goals and being the things that are important to us, but they are. They are. It's the little things. It's the little things. People say, you don't have to compliment me on all the big things, but just on a few little things now and then. Let me know that you care. Let me know that you're noticing. Let me know that I'm important to you. You see, that's very, very, very necessary. for us. What we feel is necessary for other people is very necessary for us. Remember that. Because you're the creator of the other people. You're the creator of their wanting, needing, and must-having things. You're the creator of that. So, now start creating for yourself. Start creating what it is that you want in your life. Now, what do you want in your life? What do you want? Whatever it is, here it is. I don't see anything there. That's right, because you have nothing in mind. You have nothing in mind. Think about it. What is it that delights you? I said, bless your feet. And so Ellen and Sylvia picked up their foot and started to caress their foot. And as they were caressing their foot, they had this blissful smile on their face. Well, do that. Do that. Look. Going back to our childhood, when are children most blissful? When they're sucking their thumb or they're sucking their toe, they can get their foot up there pretty good, you know. Mm-hmm. Or when they are being massaged or when they're getting a rub down with Johnson baby oil. And they just wiggle into it. They just like to snuggle into the hands of their mother as their mother is just massaging them and making them feel good. You see, these are all the things. Think about it. I'm not trying to tell you that it has to be sensual or something like that. I'm just saying it's something simple. And you find the divinity within you. You live the divinity within you. And you will be constantly in that state of bliss, the inexhaustible laughter of God. Don't wait too long, because you're missing an awfully lot of fun. I love you.